In the early 1900s, there were nearly 5,000 Rosenwald schools in the U.S. South. They were public schools for rural African-American children bankrolled by a Chicagoan named Julius Rosenwald. His name has largely been lost to history, and so have the schools that he built. But NPR's Gabriela Emanuel reports some economists think they hold important lessons for today.
Just off the old Dixie Highway in northwest Georgia, about an hour outside Atlanta, a white building stands proudly on a hilltop.
To me, it looks like a church.
Marianne Coleman has taken care of this building for some 20 years. She stands out front, looking up at the gleaming paint, the big windows, the pointed roof. It never was a church. Instead, it was a two-room schoolhouse. A schoolhouse that was something of a sanctuary for the African Americans in Cassville, Georgia.
When this school was built, there was a lot of pride, especially in the community. It was a new building. It wasn't an old building.
Coleman's great-grandfather built it in 1923. Think back to the South at that time. Lots of segregation, lots of inequality, not many high-quality schools for black children. Two men sought to change that, Booker T. Washington of the Tuskegee Institute and Julius Rosenwald, part owner of Sears, Roebuck & Company.
Mr. Washington was the man with the plan, and Mr. Rosenwald was the man with the money.
The local community and school boards also pitched in. They built 4,977 schools. Today, they're called Rosenwald schools. They had the best architectural designs of the time. Big windows to maximize sunlight. They had no electricity. Good sanitation, good ventilation. The Noble Hill School is one of the few that's still standing. Should we go in?
All righty.
In the 1950s, Coleman learned to read and write in this classroom. We get inside and head to the far wall. It brings back memories of the chilly childhood winters.
This is chimney where we had the pot-bellied stove. We all came in cold in the morning, so we'd go hug the heater, warm the front part, warm the back part, then we'd go sit down.
Coleman's whole family sat in those chairs. Her mom and dad and all sorts of aunts and uncles went to school here. They'd go to class, and then they'd go pick cotton. But Coleman says Noble Hill School is not just about her family. It's bigger than that.
This is part of history. This is part of our history.
Economists at the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago say it's more than history. The Rosenwald schools aren't just a relic of the past. They're relevant today.
I think it's really important to emphasize that turn of the 20th century, the deep rural South looked a lot like developing countries today for blacks.
That's Dan Aronson of the Chicago Fed. For one thing, he says there was poor education.
There was about a three-year gap between whites and blacks in years of completed schooling.
Take students born in 1900, for example. Whites, on average, graduated the eighth grade. Black students, they got to the fifth grade. Then came Rosenwald.
Okay, so you went from a three-year gap to less than 1 year, basically between the world wars.
Which is a really rapid change, is that right?
Huge.
Aronson was curious about how progress could be made that quickly. So he got to work, matching up data from where the schools were built with other big data sets. Census data.
Medicare data, Social Security data.
World War II enlistment data. He and other economists used this data to compare communities that had a Rosenwald school with communities that didn't. And turns out these schools had a big impact on kids in the area.
Well, first and foremost, they got more education. They potentially became more mobile, migrating to the north.
Their IQ scores were higher. They made more money.
They lived a little bit longer. Women delayed marriage. They ultimately had fewer kids. Oh, and then one last thing is crime rates also went down.
So for Julius Rosenwald, this was a philanthropic home run a century ago. For Dan Aronson, it may still be. He thinks these old schools may have lessons left to teach. Gabriela Emanuel, NPR News.